Hello, I'm Amy Kudwa. I'm with the Office of Public Affairs at the Department of Homeland Security. I'm joined today by Secretary Janet Napolitano, who's here to talk with us about aviation security, both what we're doing here domestically as well as overseas. We have about 25 minutes for today's chat, and she will open with some brief remarks, and then we'll go straight to your questions.
Well, thank you, Amy. And yes, I will be brief, but I think we all understand that aviation security is one of the most important responsibilities of the Department of Homeland Security. And that's both domestically and internationally. After the events of December 25, I think it reminded everyone that aviation remains a target of Al-Qaeda and how important it's going to be for us to work in a variety of ways to keep improving aviation security. So what are we doing? Well, domestically, at domestic airports, you may have already seen some of the things that we're doing. We're installing advanced imaging technology, which is the next iteration of technology beyond the magnetometer. It will help us detect liquids and powders and gels, other substances that someone may be trying to smuggle onto a plane and use as an explosive. You may see more canine teams. You may see more explosive detection equipment. You won't see, but there will be present more behavior detection officers. And there will be different things at different airports, and I think that's important to remind people of. I'm often given the comment, at this airport I had to do this, and at this airport I had to do that. Well, that's on purpose. We do things on a random pattern basis so that those who seek to do us harm can't rely on predictability. Internationally, of course, we don't actually screen or clear passengers. That's done within foreign airports. But one of the things we can do is work internationally across the community of nations to improve worldwide aviation security. And that's important because aviation is a global system. When once you're into that global system, you potentially can get anywhere. So we have been working with ICAO, which is the United Nations Aviation Branch, through a series of regional meetings. We've already had one in Europe, one in Mexico City. We'll have one in Tokyo at the end of this week. We will have meetings also in Africa and in the Middle East to agree on common standards for airport security and screening, and therefore give everyone around the world confidence in the aviation environment. Our goal at the department is to minimize the risk that there can ever be a successful attack on a United States bound plane. Are there 100% guarantees? No. No secretary would say there are 100% guarantees. But are there things that we can do, practical, common sense things, using our best technology that will minimize the risk? Absolutely. And that's what we are implementing now.
Thank you. Well, as you would expect, we have a number of questions on both Facebook and Twitter about streamlining the time it takes to get through security, particularly after the Christmas attack. Here's a representative one from Neil Swartz. He asks, is there anything being done to streamline the security screening process? Or do we think that it just needs to intensify the screening process, making it longer? Or could they make it more efficient and shorten wait times?
Actually, we're doing a lot to look at the wait times. I know it's such a frustration for everybody in an airport. But we are conducting a lot of research on, for example, the ability to detect powders or gels in shoes so that people would no longer have to take off their shoes. We're doing some very cutting-edge research now with our national labs. We've asked them, give us the next iteration of an airport checkpoint so that we're not just being reactive to what has occurred on Christmas, but also being proactive in the sense of really moving forward in the next generation of technology. We hope as we do that, of course, one of our goals is to minimize the inconvenience and the wait times for passengers.
Thank you. We also have a number of questions about privacy as it pertains to these new technologies. Christian Worley asks, why do we have to have these new scanners that potentially invade our privacy when pat-downs should suffice? Plus, we already have metal detectors.
Well, quite frankly, a lot of people think pat-downs are more invasive than these new technologies. But the new technologies, the scanners, are materially better than the magnetometer because they help us find anomalies that someone may be trying to smuggle onto a plane, a gel pack, for example, secured to the small of the back. And so that, combined with all the other things we do, will allow us to ascertain which passengers really require a pat-down and a second, what we call a secondary inspection. Given that, the technology, by the way, is much less invasive, it's not invasive, really, in my view, at all of privacy now compared to the original iterations of the technology. I think those are the pictures that a lot of people have seen. But the current iterations simply give a figure. It is read by someone off-site. They're not even there associating it with you, and the image is not retained at all.
Still on the topic of the new advanced imaging technology, Kim Rock asks, are these new airport scanners safe? How can we be sure that down the road radiation won't be a factor?
They're very, very safe. They've been tested in a number of different environments, and we simply would not be able to deploy them in commercial airports if they had not already been certified totally safe.
Got a question here from Cynthia Cummins. She's asking about layering of security, which is something we talk about a lot at DHS. She's asking about future plans for onboard security devices that would serve as a backup for terminal screenings, perhaps some sort of sensor that would detect bomb elements or metal as passengers enter or are seated on the aircraft.
You know, that's a really intriguing idea, and one of the things that we are having research performed on it is general sensor technology overall, not just for inside aircraft, but for example on cargo containers and things of that sort. Right now, the technology is not developed quite enough to be available to that extent. But one of the things we are doing on the inside of airplanes is adding to the staffing on federal air marshals. More international flights now carry federal air marshals, and the president's budget for 2011 adds substantially to the number of federal air marshals who will be on flights. Of course, they're there undercover, you don't know when they're there, but they're there to provide an extra layer of protection and deterrence.
Okay. We have a question from Corey Hulse asking about if these new technologies are really adding to security or are they just inconveniencing passengers?
Yeah, it must seem like that sometimes, particularly when you're in a long line and you're late for a flight. But these technologies are all used and associated with identified threats in the aviation environment. And they're all used to help us minimize the risk that one of those threats will actually come to fruition. The more we use the technologies, the better the technologies become, and the quicker they become. But this is not just about security theater. This is about real security for passengers in the aviation environment.
Moving a little bit beyond technology, we have a question from Ken Johnson asking, wouldn't more bomb-sniffing dogs be more effective than expensive full-body scanners at detecting explosive materials?
Well, they're not mutually exclusive, and we've actually added more bomb-sniffing dogs domestically. We've asked international airports to add more dogs, and the president's budget includes money for more dogs. So I totally agree. Dogs are a great complement, but they are just that. They are a complement. They are one more layer and what needs to be a multiple layered system of security at airports.
We have a question from Lynn Shepard, and she's asking a little bit more about what are we seeing internationally. You're doing all of these international meetings. We've talked a lot about some of the things we're doing domestically. Do we have any say as to security procedures in other countries? And if not, what are we doing?
Well, we don't have direct say. We don't run international airports. We don't conduct the screening at international airports. But we can, particularly for airports that are last points of departure to the United States, we do inspect those regularly. We always have the power not to permit an international airport to have last points of departure to the United States. That power obviously has not been exercised very often, but it is there. And it is one of the ways that we have to work with international airports on their screening, their technology, their manpower, their capacity. But I think it's important to say, look, not every airport in the world is the same, and not every airport in the world has identical technology, manpower, and the like. And that's why this international aviation effort that I described earlier, working with the United Nations, working to build a consensus of nations around the world about what really makes a safe airport, is so very, very important.
We're seeing a number of questions about cargo security and what we are doing in that realm. How close are we to 100% screening of onboard cargo?
We are very, very close to 100%, we will be done with that very soon for all domestic cargo, and by the end of the year with international on the aviation side.
I've got a question from Todd Fernandez asking about DHS employees, TSOs in particular, as well as airport and flight crew staff and the screening that they undergo at the airports, because in some places it seems like they don't go through the checkpoint, some places they do. So he's trying to better understand how we screen pilots and flight attendants, but not everyone else at the airport.
Well, again, that, as I said before, we don't do on purpose the same thing at every airport. There is deliberate uncertainty built into the system. Different airports adopt different methodologies for actual flight crew and pilots, provided that they have the right type of identification. But that is something that then we supervise and see as we do security checks at airports themselves.
A question on the new TSA administrator announced yesterday.
Yeah.
Got a question from Ron Russell asking about a military person to run TSA rather than somebody with an industry background.
Well, Major General Harding is a wonderful nominee for the TSA. He has 33 years of counterterrorism and intel experience in our nation's military. He's been in the private sector the last few years, and in that connection actually worked with the TSA. So he knows the agency, and I think he's got the combination of management and leadership skills that will really help propel TSA forward. And that's really the key thing. You need a leader there. It's a large component, many, many employees spread across the world, and he'll be a great leader for them.
A number of questions coming in now about what happens if somebody chooses not to go through one of the advanced imaging technologies. What options do they have?
Usually they have the option to go through a magnetometer and a possible pat-down, so kind of the standard system that we have in place now in a separate line other than through the AIT.
Okay. Let's see. Sorry, they're coming in very quickly now. We've got a number of questions about small airport security. A lot of talk about the big airports where some of this new technology is being deployed. How are we approaching security at smaller airports?
Well, we're starting obviously with the big airports because they account for the overwhelming majority of all passengers. But the fact remains is that we need security in the small airports as well. So while they may not see the advanced imaging technology machines anytime soon, they will be seeing more explosives detection equipment. They will be seeing perhaps more K-9 teams, other officers on staff at those small airports for their security needs.
Okay. A number of questions in here. One is from Marty Verone. Talking about, there's been a lot of discussion about the high-level connect the dots after December 25th attack. Right. What are some of the local, on-the-ground things that are happening, both domestically and overseas, to make sure that this sort of thing doesn't happen again?
Well, one of the things that's so very important for DHS is our recognition that one federal department alone, no matter how good or how large, can be the answer to our nation's security needs. And indeed, the state, local, tribal law enforcement community around our country comprises 800,000 additional pairs of eyes that really can help meet our security needs. And so one of the things we've been doing is building on the concept of fusion centers, where we have federal, state, local law enforcement all in the same place, access to different databases, able to talk with one another in the coffee room, work cases together more easily, follow threat streams, and a place where we can centralize giving out information about threat streams that we're seeing and receive information back. Building that architecture is one of the key initiatives we also have underway at the Department of Homeland Security.
you. We have another question on Twitter about trusted traveler programs and where those might factor into the security regime going forward.
They will factor in. One of the things we have seen is that when they work well, they are a fairly high maintenance part of airport and airline security. So I think we'll be moving forward on some trusted traveler programs, but perhaps not as quickly as some would like.
A question from Michael Allison on Twitter, on Facebook, asking about as new technology goes online, will people have an opportunity to see the device work, ask questions of the government? How are these new devices going to be introduced to the traveling public?
You know, that's a great great suggestion. And quite frankly, I think if we had done a little bit more on the rollout of some of these AIT machines, some of the stories about them in the newspapers and elsewhere would have been more complete. I think we really are focused now on how do we get the public aware and comfortable knowing that their privacy rights are going to be protected moving forward, but that this is a better technology designed for their safety. So we have people in our department now, including you, Amy, who are focused on what is the rollout strategy. And if you have any ideas on that, of things that you would find helpful, I hope you will send those to us.
Questions from a number of folks asking about whether these machines are going to come to their individual airports. North Carolina is asking, and just more broadly, are all airports in the United States ultimately going to have these new scanners in place?
We are in 11 airports are rolling out right now as we speak. We're obviously beginning with larger airports. By the end of the year, we will have 450 of the scanners installed, and very shortly thereafter, we hope in the next fiscal year to have 1,000. So this is a very rapid deployment. I don't know how quickly it took to deploy all the magnetometers when those were first introduced into aviation. They raise actually a lot of the same questions that we're getting about these. Privacy, safety, will they slow down the lines? And as I think people recognize, now it's just an accepted part of travel, and it's something that we manage our way through. And that's the way we're addressing the AITs and all the new technologies, is adapting the aviation environment to the threats that we're seeing, but in such a fashion that travel is not unduly impinged.
We have a question from Slawomir Maniecki, apologies if I got that wrong, about what other measures are being applied to airport safety besides these new scanners.
Well, as I've suggested, explosive detection equipment being used on passengers as well as on cargo, more use of canine teams, more use of undercover officers, higher utilization of federal air marshals are just some of the layers that we have now added to airport security. And again, we have some cutting-edge research being done in part with our national laboratories, really to help design what the next iteration, the next modality needs to be, so that we really deal with the evolving nature of the threats that we see to aviation.
And building on what you just said, we have a question from Sean Williams, if federal air marshals eventually will be on every international flight?
I don't know that they will. We find that if we hit a certain percentage and we do that by true randomization, that really gets you, the mathematicians and scientists will tell you, really gets you pretty close to 100% in any event. So we have increased the number of flights who are covered. They are done on a random basis, but I don't know that we're going to do 100%.
Very interesting question, I think, just came in from someone named Rachel Dixon. She's saying that seems like a lot of the rules and restrictions we adhere to in airports were established after 9/11, but it doesn't seem like they're ever going to be rolled back, even though they don't really add to our security, in her opinion. She's asking your thoughts on that.
Well, I'd kind of like to know which ones she thinks don't add to security. You know, I hear a lot about the shoes. We did have the incident before with the shoe bomber. And I will just tell you that the technology right now doesn't allow us to adequately test shoes when they're on a person. We think as technology develops, that will help solve that problem. Same with liquids. I know a lot of people get frustrated by the limitation on the liquids they can bring on. Again, over time, we think there will be technology that will help answer those issues. But nothing that we are doing now, to my knowledge, is unrelated to threats or threat streams that are current or that we know about and that we feel that we need to protect against.
Okay, we have time for just a couple more questions. With these new technologies, Michael Allison asks, will family members ever be able to allow to accompany to the gate, or better yet, be at the gate when you return home?
Oh, that would be nice. That's always a great feeling. Right now, the gate area is designed to be a sterile area, and it's designed to be a secure area in terms of who is actually permitted to board a plane. It may be possible to change that as we move forward, but right now I can't say that.
Okay. And just for our last question, we've got somebody asking, scroll down here for a second. Mike McCullough asks, do we take cues from how other nations like Israel does airline security checks based on multiple levels of security instead of just one that could fail?
Right. Well, as I said before, we do use multiple levels of security. And we did actually talk with the people in Israel after Christmas. Of course, their situation is somewhat different. They have one airport that throughputs about 50,000 passengers a day. We throughput about 2 million passengers a day. So some of the things they can do would really clog up U.S. air travel. But we're always looking at what other nations are doing and sharing that with other nations. And again, that gets back to why it is that we're addressing this, not just domestically, but also internationally as well. As I keep reminding people, there were individuals from 17 different nations who were on flight 253 who would have perished if that plot by Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab had been successful. So this really is a concern of the community of nations, not solely the United States.
Well, thank you, Secretary Napolitano, for your time today, and thank you all for joining us. We will get this posted on the White House official website very soon.